bet.
The board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't.
Wizard.
I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into another busy Bet the Board Week 8 NFL podcast. We'll be joined by Payne Insider in just a matter of moments. Hopefully, folks were able to take advantage of our special edition NBA season preview. Special thanks goes out to Rob Perez, Worldwide Wob, for jumping in on that. Payne, did you feel neglected that we weren't able to include you in the NBA season preview?
Not really. Hopefully we will be able to create a tripod there, working out some contract stuff, and hopefully get that figured out.
Yeah, looking forward to it. I know we had a lot of fun previewing some win totals, major season awards, and futures. So keep your eyes peeled for that. If you're not already signed up to the Bet the Board podcast account, I encourage you to do so. SoundCloud, iTunes, or visit us at toddstake.com. And while I call it Bet the Board, this week may be a little bit different. You'll understand the joke if we refer to it as Pass the Board later in the episode. But Payne, before we get to Dave Mason, who will join us in just a matter of seconds, Cardinals-Ravens, many major takeaways from the Monday night debacle down there in Phoenix. I know anyone sitting on a Ravens or under ticket had to feel pretty fortunate they were able to get to the window.
Yeah, it was an interesting game. Obviously, the last leg of our teaser closed out. If you wanted to middle it, that ended up coming to fruition as well after the block punt. Again, for me, the metrics kind of lie to my eyes. What I see from the Cardinals is not what the metrics and efficiency ratings tell me, so that'll be an interesting team to gauge moving forward. Ravens, maybe not this week, but I think they might have some value moving forward. This is a team that we have middle of the pack in efficiency ratings, and you look at their 1-6 record. I think there'll be some value moving forward past this week.
And you mentioned the Arizona Cardinals, a game we'll get to in greater detail when they head out to the Midwest to take on Cleveland this weekend. But let's welcome in from Bet Online. You hear him each and every Thursday on the Bet the Board podcast throughout the fall. The one, the only, Dave Mason. Dave, thanks again for joining us, my friend.
Hey, fellas, how you doing?
Doing very well, but I guess the big question, as we always start your segment, you know, good weekend for the house a week ago, and, you know, what were we looking at as far as overall performance?
But the NFL was pretty much break even, to tell you the truth. We were up small heading into Monday night, and the total didn't hurt us, the spread really didn't hurt us, but teasers killed us. I mean, the teasers have been really bad for Bet Online this year. The players are really profiting off the teasers, and you know, Monday night was no different. You know, those prime time games where that spread is, you know, -7, -8, -9, that range, and then everybody's teasing. I know I heard Payne just say how, you know, he closed out the teaser on Monday night, and he was not alone. Those games are just, there's so much teaser exposure that when they hit, it doesn't really matter too much about the spread. You know, that's, you look at that spread and you look at that total, and you, this, by looking at it, like, okay, the book probably did good. Not made it a break-even weekend for the house and the players. You know, the night game was another of that kind of number that the teasers just kill the books. You know, the Sunday before, where was that Patriots game? That was another huge teaser exposure. So, and looking at today's or this week's schedule, I mean, it's going to be the same thing with tonight's game. The Patriots -8, everybody's going to be teasing that down. And then Monday night as well, Carolina's -7. Everybody's going to be teasing that down. You know, people tease it down to that -1, -2, pick them, that range. And the books are going to get beat up on those teasers. So we have a negative hold on teasers this year. You know, it's the, we're here week 8 in the NFL season, and the public has a profit on teasers for the season.
And it begs the question, Dave, and I know this might be a little more theoretical when you talk to your guys on the stage. I mean, is it to the point where you think raising juice potentially puts the house in a better position, or what kind of strategies, if any, have been thrown around to protect against some of that teaser liability moving forward?
Well, that's the trend. I mean, you see a lot of books doing that, and, you know, you cross those key numbers, you're crossing, you know, that's what the bettors want to do. They want to cross that 7 and the 3, you know, those two key numbers. Or they're using that 6 point, 7 point, 6.5 point teaser. They're using those extra, they're really maximizing the value of those extra points. They're not, you know, teasing stuff down from minus 16 to minus 10 or stuff like that. They're crossing key numbers as much as possible. So, yeah, I mean, that's a trend you see the last couple years is books are adjusting. And, you know, if you cross the 7 and the 3, you're getting an extra 5 cent juice or whatever it is a lot of books are doing. So that's the trend we're going. And you know, like I said, I mean, this year is a prime example. I think, you know, I think bettors are getting a lot more savvy with it, too. You know, years back, people are teasing across the 0. You know, they're teasing from minus 3 or plus 3. And you just don't see that much of that anymore. People are really using, are more educated. I guess maybe that's because the internet or whatever. And they're really optimizing those 6, 6.5, 7 points or whatever they're teasing.
So from teaser liabilities moving forward into week 8, we know the Jets, huge liability last week. Nick Folk, probably not your happiest guy that you watched perform this past weekend, but moving forward to week 8, any huge liabilities for the house?
Well, from just straight wagers, yeah, we have a ton. It's going to be one of those weekends. Last week, we kind of had a break from the massive, you know, numerous games of 8-2 bet counts, but tonight's going to be a big one. 78% of the money's on the Pats, and like it's going to be a huge teaser liability. So even if the Dolphins lose by 3, those teasers are going to be in play still. The Vikings, people are on the Vikings, 83% of the money's on the Vikings. The Cards is huge. No one's betting the Browns. 98% of the early money's on the Cardinals. 90% of the early money's on the Jets. And that Sunday night game is going to be massive. 90% of the money is on the Packers. I mean, we're already seeing twice as much money on the Packers than any other team outside of the Patriots tonight. So that Sunday night game is just going to be a whopper.
Well, thankfully for this podcast, Dave, we're going to help you try and eliminate some of those liabilities. As Payne and I look to make cases for the not-so-public sides on a handful of the marquee games. Of course, we'll get to the Denver-Green Bay game in great detail, knowing how big it is, not only for sports books, but also from the casual fan, seeing 2-6-0 teams lock horns. And you mentioned some of the liabilities. Have any of the professionals and sharp guys started to tip their hand in the way they're looking towards the weekend?
Yeah, Lions, got some Lions, definitely some Vikings, some Steelers. And I think what you're kind of hinting, we're thinking Denver's going to be a sharp play, probably the Cowboys. But, yeah, the biggest now is the Vikings, Steelers, and some on the Lions.
Yeah, I mean, if you guys want to bump that Denver game up to 3.5 right now, I'm happy to give you a sharp bet to get the wheel rolling there to offset a little bit of that liability.
Yeah, well, I don't think that's going to happen, pal.
Well, if that might not happen,
you're welcome to buy a point if you want.
I appreciate your generosity there. It's good to know you're always looking out for the well-being of Payne and myself. And you mentioned some of the things that may not happen, but what are some of the things that are happening at Bet Online this weekend for some of our loyal listeners here on Bet the Board?
Well, it's one of the busiest weekends of 2015, besides NFL and college football, obviously. The NBA season starts. Action's coming in. We have the earliest lines in the industry, pretty much day to day. Check our site in the afternoon for tomorrow's openers, the earliest openers in the industry. Live betting on most games. Of course, the Breeders' Cup, American Pharoah, first Triple Crown winner in 38 years, is going for the Breeders' Cup Challenge, or Breeders' Cup Classic, sorry about that, Breeders' Cup Classic on Saturday. We had 13 races on Friday and Saturday. We got the 7% racebook rebate. And the World Series, of course. The Worlds are up 2-0, so we got Game 3 tomorrow. And if you want to come in on the action on such a huge sports betting weekend, we still have that 50% one-time bonus for Bet the Board listeners. Use promo code BTB50. URL www.betonline.ag/bettheboard for details.
Dave, it is always a pleasure getting your input each and every week on Thursday to share what's going on behind the book. And while a lot of our listeners won't be rooting for you guys over the weekend, I have to imagine Payne and I will find ourselves on similar sides as to what the house needs to maintain a little bit of financial stability, my friend.
All right, fellas. Enjoy your weekend.
Appreciate it, Dave.
Dave Mason, if you're not already following him on Twitter, at Dave Mason, B-O-L. And as he mentioned, plenty of great opportunities and offers through Bet the Board for our loyal listeners to promo codes, reload, you name it. They love to take care of our guys that are on here. And Payne, Dave mentioned a handful of games that have caught the eye of the house. We obviously knew the general public and how they were going to look at this Green Bay-Denver game. I want to get to that one in a little bit. But let's start with Arizona-Cleveland. He talked about how it's impossible for them to try and find a bet on the Browns. But the Browns get some reinforcements in the secondary. It looks like Joe Hayden and Gibson are going to be full goes this weekend. We still don't know who's starting at quarterback between Johnny Manziel or Josh McCown. And Arizona, you know, do they get caught looking ahead to the bye week knowing this isn't going to define their season? A road game at Cleveland coming off of that Monday night performance.
Obviously a tough spot for Arizona. Short week, traveling across the country, looking ahead to the bye week. Pretty comfortable in the NFC West. But you're right, Cleveland does get guys back, but McCown, shoulder injury, rib injury as well. I think he's a gamer. He's tough. You may question his ability, but you can't question his toughness. So I would think he tries to give this a go here. For me, it's only Cleveland or pass. I can't be on Arizona in this spot.
And when you look at the game right now, 4.5 at BetOnline, total of 46. And Payne, I know a lot of people say that about me. They question my toughness, but they always know I'm a gamer. So, you know, I start to put myself on the same page as Josh McCown. If he's not able to go, how does the handicap change with Johnny Football taking the snaps under center?
Yeah, clearly not as good. And so if you're not as good as Josh McCown, that's probably a tough pill to swallow. Some other issues, meeting with the league office this week. Who knows where his mental state is right now? So that's, for me at that point, it would probably be a layoff of the game completely, depending on where the line went. Obviously, if Johnny Manziel gets announced in there and this goes to six, you know, probably considering it once again. But for me, I do like McCown in this spot at the current price if he is a go.
Yeah, definitely can make a case for the Browns. We know that they struggle to stop the run, but situationally it may be too much to pass up, especially being able to grab four and a hook, which is widely available right now at the time of recording. May as well stay in the division formerly known as the AFC's black and blue equivalent, Cincinnati off the bye week. They'll head into Pittsburgh. As Dave mentioned, we've seen some money on the Steelers amid speculation that Big Ben will be the man taking snaps. BetOnline sitting at pick minus $1.25, total of 48 here. First question, are we buying the Bengals? And secondly, do we really believe that Big Ben is anywhere close to being 100%?
I think we need to buy the Bengals at this point. Most efficient offense in the NFL, and I'm not sure anybody, when you talk about the Cincinnati Bengals over the last few seasons, you would think offensive team. To me, you would kind of associate Cincinnati with being defensive, but since Mike Zimmer left town for Minnesota two seasons ago, this is really just an average defense. So I do buy into Cincinnati being real. Shockingly, Andy Dalton in the Bengals, number one in the NFL in yards per pass attempt at 9 yards. And that will be an area this week that they'll look to exploit against that Pittsburgh secondary. As for Big Ben, supposedly he's going to play. Who knows how effective he's going to be? Who knows how confident he will be without his mobility? Clearly, that will be limited this week. And you look at an offensive line now, minus Pouncey, and then you factor in the left tackle being out now as well. Could create some problems for a Roethlisberger that's not as mobile as he usually is.
Yeah, and I won't claim to have any insight into the situation, but reading the tea leaves and what's out there, Big Ben's comments, doesn't quite seem to be on the same page as management, who continues to assure fans that, you know, Big Ben is going to be out there. Big Ben says he's hoping he can go, and you mentioned the mobility without two offensive linemen. It kind of makes him a sitting duck against one of the league's more underrated defensive lines if Geno Atkins is feasting in the middle.
Yeah, I definitely will agree with you there. Clearly, a lot of this this move from Cincinnati opening a 3-point favorite to now being as high as a 1.5-point underdog is speculation that Big Ben will go. We know he's tough. We know he's a gamer. Confidence level, probably not very high. Mobility level, not very high. Questionable offensive line. Clearly this is, when you look at these injuries, that first game back usually takes some time to get acclimated. The key here for Pittsburgh will be a heavy dose of the ground game. We talked about this Cincinnati defense. I think they're a little overrated. I think they're an average unit defensively, but not what we saw under Mike Zimmer. They do allow some rushing yards, so it'll be a heavy dose of Le'Veon Bell, especially if Big Ben isn't 100% or the alternative Landry Jones is in the game.
Yeah, and want to be clear, I think a lot of people, as we talk about speculative money, that's very real, what you've seen come in so far this week on the Steelers, taking that number out to Pittsburgh, a slight chalk, trying to get ahead of the market. Of course, since we're not with you on the weekend when the information is fluid and can be changing, you know, there is always a distinct possibility that you'll see Cincinnati become the side as this price ticks out. And while this is a game plan I really didn't want to talk about, I think we need to, given its standalone time slot in anything but primetime, Detroit and Kansas City complete the trifecta of installments across the pond. Right now, you're looking at the Chiefs. We'll call them a 5.5-point favorite at BetOnline. Total at 45.5. Saw some pretty strong comments from Bart Scott yesterday saying that the Lions might want to trade Calvin Johnson, look to deal Matt Stafford, blow the whole thing up. But clearly, things not exactly in honeymoon phase for the Lions, who fired their offensive coordinator a week before even going out to London.
Well, I think this is a great game to talk about just because we get to say Jim Bob Cooter. And that is the new offensive coordinator for the Lions. You brought it to my attention. Stafford and him have a fantastic relationship. He's going to call more of the offensive plays that suit Stafford's game, that Stafford feels most comfortable with. If Detroit was ever to get help being two-dimensional and having a semblance of a ground game, it would be this week facing the Chiefs. It'll be interesting to see how the offense operates. I want to kind of see what they do differently. I want to see if there's life in them. That's first of all. Detroit has made this trip before to London, so I think they'll be pretty much acclimated to that aspect of things. Jim Bob Cooter, highly praised by Peyton Manning. In fact, if you read into this a little bit, Manning threw a little temper tantrum in the front office when Cooter was given a heftier contract in Detroit, you know, thus leaving Denver. So he's highly respected. It'll be interesting to see if that translates to the field Sunday.
Yeah, I was definitely a little disappointed with Detroit's effort a week ago against Minnesota. We always talk about expectations, and when you know some of the sharp guys were backing the Lions, to see them kind of unravel at the hands of the Vikings, somewhat troubling. I guess the other point, you know, you make a compelling case for backing the Lions going into the bye, maybe trying to build some momentum. Can you really consider laying this kind of number with Kansas City, knowing how offensively challenged this team has been in recent weeks?
Yeah, absolutely not. This is Matthew Stafford and the Detroit Lions or pass. There are a few sixes out there. Most of these sixes were gobbled up in the marketplace, though. And as Dave Mason alluded to, that was the sharp side, especially at six.
Yeah, I think as you talk about, the Lions have been bad. Are they a touchdown bad against Kansas City? That very much remains to be seen. A team catching a touchdown in a division game, numbers actually gone through the key number of 7 out to 7.5 at BetOnline. Total at 48.5. Tampa goes on the road against Atlanta. Tampa extremely banged up at the receiver position. Of course, the Bucs are on the fortunate receiving end of a massive beatdown last year on a Thursday night, losing in Atlanta 56-14. No Vincent Jackson, looks to be lost for a couple weeks, but Austin Seferian Jenkins, a full participant in practice. How do we look at this Bucs offense without some of their key weapons?
Well, you kind of nailed it there. It is a big revenge game for sure after being embarrassed on national TV last year. But how Tampa lost last week, it's going to be tough to take. It really is. Vincent Jackson out, Murphy out. So you're going to see Evans double-teamed. And right now at this stage in his career, I'm not sure you want to see Winston forcing balls to a guy that's going to be double-teamed or throwing to guys who really can't get open. The key here will be a ground game from the muscle hamster. Can he get it going? Atlanta's defense has regressed a bit over the last few weeks, but they're still very stout against the run. Tied for fourth in the NFL, 3.7 yards per carry. So if they can't get a ground game, this could be an uphill battle for Tampa offensively. We know what some of their issues are defensively. We talked about those on the Monday podcast, the cover two or the Tampa two, whatever it is. Just not a good variation of defense to use this day and age. Can the Falcons offense get back on track? That'll be a big question. For me, I don't love the game. I know you probably have a little stronger feeling on it towards the dog. We kind of talked about this again on the Monday podcast. This is a 6-1 Falcons team that there is going to be value fading. We faded in the last 2 weeks. Right now, and with our efficiency metrics, they're slightly below average team.
Yeah, well, I mean, we are the unofficial podcast of the Fade the Falcons bandwagon, so I don't think we'll ever be doing a live remote in the Atlanta area, at least this season, given the current edition. But you mentioned Tampa. I can probably make a slight case for the dog here, especially as the number goes for a touchdown. I think there'll be plenty of points in this game as well. 48.5 seems a little bit manageable for the reasons you mentioned. I think Atlanta will have success moving the football not only through the air, but they'll be able to run it. And Jameis Winston, if he's looking to try and force countless balls into double teams, may lead to short fields, turnovers, or potential pick sixes going the other way. A game out west that's taken on a little bit more intrigue given last week's results pain. I know we mentioned it briefly on Monday, talking about how the look-ahead lines had the New York Jets listed as a 3-point favorite. Books elected to open this number much shorter. We've since seen the money come in on the Jets, one of the most public plays of the weekend, but I think you have some other thoughts that this move may be a little bit real as we look at the Jets, a 2.5-point road favorite going on the road to Oakland with a total of 44.
Regardless of real or sharp, the key for any better is to enter the market at the best time. We talked about this Monday. I said a pick'em would not last. And whether it's sharp money, public money driving this number out, a pick isn't going to last. This could obviously be a move for a repop on the Raiders at 3. This is a tough game for me to handicap. From a market perspective, I'm shocked all the tickets are coming in on the Jets, but they did cover last week in what was the most bet game, so I guess bettors are going back to the well a little bit. I just thought how Oakland looked last week against San Diego, we'd have a better two-way action here. So for me, this is a game I'm definitely staying off of. We've kind of talked about David Carr in the past. Yes, he is getting better. Yes, he is improving, but he still has that little gunslinger mentality in him. And when the ground game isn't going, he's going to force some passes. I do not think the ground game is going to go. We saw similar to this in the Denver game. He's going to throw the opposing team a ball or two. And that would be my concern here going to the well with Oakland once again this week.
Yeah, I think you make a good point. I mean, the Raiders are a team that we haven't grown accustomed to seeing consistency each and every time they hit the football field. How do they handle prosperity? As you mentioned, moving the football against the Jets defense, a much more daunting task than San Diego that was operating at about a fraction of full speed in that particular contest. And when we mention teams that are maybe getting healthy at the right time, all accounts and reports out of Seattle, they're going to have a lot of the key cogs back. Not some of the big household names that people have grown accustomed to, but some of the key pieces as far as depth are concerned. Dave mentioned he thinks that Dallas may very well be the sharp side, and hard to argue given the trend we've seen with home underdogs. But Seattle, a 6-point favorite in this spot, going down to Big D. Total on this one sits at 41. Can Dallas bounce back from the pretty disappointing effort against the Giants, a contest where they were about plus 160 in net yardage, but were fallen victim to the big turnover and, of course, special teams?
Not sure they bounce back in a straight-up win, but they could bounce back and potentially cover this spot. We saw a great performance from Seattle Thursday night, and when you look at this Seattle team, they're far from being out of the woods. You're still at 3-4. Every game at this point is must-win. You look back, there is small a revenge angle here. Dallas went into Seattle as a double-digit dog last season and won straight up. You're looking at this Dallas team. It looks like McFadden is going to be the lead back. He's already talked about being a little beat up after touting the rock last week almost 30 times. So
what is this, 2008? Darren McFadden is a lead back for an NFL franchise?
It's scary. Obviously, that's not going to last because he can't stay healthy. But Matt Cassel, he was very bad last week. Maybe he's a little bit better this week, has a full game under his belt. You get Dez Bryant to be likely a small contributor this week. It certainly can't help or can't hurt with him being out there. For me, I would really want a – I'd love 7 here, obviously, but it's not going to get there. For me, at this price point, I'm likely off, but as Dave Mason alluded to, there will be some sharp money on Dallas.
This is a game that I think you look at and you want to make a case for the home dog and X's and O's or situation. I really, to be honest, don't see an edge for Dallas in this football game. Whether or not Dez plays, obviously that helps. But we saw Matt Cassel struggle against the Giants defense that puts no pressure on the quarterback. And yes, it was his first game in that system, so we'll give him a pass there. But there were balls that floated out there like ducks against a secondary that's nowhere close to Seattle. The Seahawks having extra time to prepare. You mentioned the revenge angle, which I think is a key component. Public or not, for me, honestly, Payne, I think it's a lay it or don't play it type scenario, especially at six.
Well, you know, for me, looking at this, you look at some of the X's and O's, and I don't think Dallas is going to be able to get that ground game going. The key here, I think, is to focus on the other side of the ball with Dallas making some improvements and an offense that still seems a little out of rhythm. You have a road team here laying six. And Seattle's offense still making some mistakes, obviously getting beast mode back and going on Thursday night. But Russell Wilson threw some questionable balls into the end zone. So it's just it's tough to lay that many points with an offensive line, and you just don't know if that consistency will be there for Seattle offensively because of that offensive line.
Yeah, well, it's funny you talk about offensive consistency because there is one team in the NFL, despite their undefeated record, that has shown absolutely none this season, and that's the Denver Broncos, who play host to the Green Bay Packers in the biggest game of the NFL season thus far. You're looking at Denver, a 2.5-point home underdog. You do have to lay a little bit of juice at BetOnline if you want to lay the points with the Pack. Total here, 45.5. We have the Denver defense ranking 1 in defensive efficiency, their offense dead last. How do we even begin to go about handicapping this particular contest?
Well, I think you first start with the line, the market. This opened pick 'em. Clearly got sent out to 3. Whether you want to think that's sharp money or not, I know a lot of people gave that game out. But for me, I think Denver is going to be the side here. It's makes me a little upset. Someone got a little trigger happy. I thought there was a great opportunity to get 3.5 here. Green Bay's defense making some strides. They're a top 10 unit in defensive efficiency. I don't believe that to be real. We may see that, obviously, with Denver's offense not being very good. But I think there'll be some opportunities here for the Denver offense to get going a little bit. We know what this Denver defense can do. Green Bay getting some parts back on offense, but really, I don't know if they have a great ground game right now. And as good as Aaron Rodgers is, if you can make them one-dimensional, it's going to go a long way. We've seen these Denver cornerbacks, this secondary. It's one of the best units in football. So I think the matchup, I think this spot really lends itself to Denver. I would absolutely love to be able to get 3.5 here. We'll likely still be on it at 3.
Well, I tried to be the best salesman this podcast has, pushing Mason, and, you know, just move it to 3.5 at least for a little bit. Give the listeners a bit of a nugget to try and take advantage of, but I'd echo your same sentiments, Payne. I think this is the opportunity where Denver's defense will play with a chip on their shoulder. They'll be able to create some strong short fields. And if Denver can protect the football, that's always the biggest concern with Manning, not turning it over in a costly position, that the Broncos will be more than fine, forcing the Packers to drive the long field. And anytime you get the better defense playing at home in prime time, clearly a underdog that's going to have a bit of an appetite from my perspective. And before we close the book on the slate of Week 8 games, I know folks want to know about the Carolina Indy game. Of course, we will do that in great detail on Monday. But the undefeated man, you know, the man behind the curtain on this podcast, I think he's 1-0 to date this season. Wanted to get his take on the Vikings and Bears since it's a football game right in his backyard.
Healthiest the Bears have been all year. First time Alshon Jeffrey isn't on the injury list. The offensive line is healthy. The only guy that probably won't play is Shea McClellan, which is probably a good thing for the Bears. And I don't think I've seen this many people run to back Teddy Bridgewater since he was at Louisville. This is a ripe spot for the Bears off the bye. I'm going with the Bears.
Do we have any injury update on Josh Ferguson for the Fighting Illini? Is he about 80% to go this weekend?
I keep hearing very doubtful, but I think Bill Kubit's holding that one up his sleeve.
All right, we can appreciate that. Payne, any quick thoughts on the Vikings-Bears game?
I would concur with our man Stan. For me, it's Chicago or pass. There's no question about that.
And those voices you hear on the other end of the podcast, you can follow our producer, Stan, Sam, whatever the hell he decides to go by each and every week. He's on Twitter at SPShoot. Payne available there as well, at Payne Insider. And if you haven't already subscribed to the podcast while listening today, SoundCloud, iTunes, or continue to visit us at toddstake.com. Payne, we got an interesting question from one of our loyal listeners. He goes by at Evan Jobst on Twitter, Ask the question, how much money from a respected group entering the market does it take to affect line movement? Of course, we saw in college football, USC-Utah last weekend, a massive amount of money came in despite public sentiment on Utah driving that number from 3 as high as 7 before there was some buyback. But in NFL terms, you know, what are we talking about, times of the week, et cetera? Some of the information that you and I, having been in this industry for so long, kind of take for granted.
Yeah, that is a good question. Depends where you're betting. Depends who you are. We've seen something as little as a nickel on a total affect the market if you're doing it at a certain spot. A lot of times these days, most of the respected guys are not flexing their muscle on the screen. They're doing a lot of their damage in the, I guess, the local market, so to speak, and they do a great job disguising what's real and what's not in these accounts. Certainly, in the NFL, from a side perspective, it's going to take a lot more money than it would if you're talking about college football to move the market that drastically. I know you kind of mentioned the USC game. That was a very, very big move by multiple groups. So it had a huge, huge influence there. NFL, just a completely different situation, completely different spot. It takes a little more money to move the market. Again, there's so much public money involved in the NFL that it does take significant money. And again, it differs depending on what you're betting, who you are, and which market you're attacking. It's going to vary. So not a great answer to that question because there is really no ABC answer to that question.
Yeah, I mean, there's never a dollar amount. I know I tweeted out a couple weeks ago mentioning that it's not necessarily the size of the bet, but the account or player that it comes from that'll influence the market as being sharp. And Payne, you mentioned depending on when you try and move on a particular game, obviously Sunday night, if you're looking for a max bet, a dime can send the market into a tizzy, and you're going to find other sports books looking to mirror some of the sharper shops offshore. And at the same time, I want to just clarify one of the terms you use when you mention on the screen and off the screen. There's a lot of great technology out there that some more advanced bettors will use, whether it's Don Best, which is probably the preeminent provider of this information in the industry. You have Sports Options out there and Sports Insights, probably the three that most folks are familiar with. You have the opportunity to move at some of the shops that are going to have to respond to action. And as you mentioned, paying locals and back alley channels that we know bets are taking place, that you can kind of create a little bit of a smoke screen, find a little bit better value. And I know this may go over a lot of listeners' heads, but it is the level of complexity that goes on, especially in a league like the NFL, where you're going to see the largest limits taking place and some of the biggest bets coming in. So want to make sure that we, you know, basically squash a myth that's out there that says, hey, X number of dollars will move a line. That's not the case. It can be a nickel. It can be a dime. It can be any amount under the sun. Having worked behind the counter, we would take upwards of $200,000 on some NFL games from casino customers and still move the line the other way just because, you know, for a lack of a better term, we really didn't respect the bet from that particular party. And so it's always important to keep in mind when you try and monitor some of this line movement, whether it be reverse lines, public sentiment, et cetera. So a good question from Evan. Not exactly a real black and white answer there, but hopefully we shed a little bit of light on the topic. And Payne, of course, this wouldn't be a Bet the Board podcast with a full comprehensive breakdown of a Miami Dolphins football game. And lo and behold, it happens to be the standalone contest this evening when Miami takes their modest two-game winning streak on the highway into Gillette Stadium to take on New England, a place where the Patriots are 20-0 in the month of October, 13-5-2 against the spread during this stretch. But are we buying the Dolphins in this particular spot with the new look, Dan Campbell offense, and all these black practice jerseys, Oklahoma drill, you name it, the change in culture going on down there in South Beach?
Well, if Dan Campbell can somehow win this game, he will be the leader in running for mayor. There's no question about that. This is a huge opportunity for him to cement himself as the full-time coach moving forward. So that's definitely something that's going to be on his mind and the players' mind because they do love him. At this point, though, the question mark becomes Ryan Tannehill. And I know if you look at a lot of the box scores last week, he looked like he was great. But he picked up
Great doesn't do him justice the way those numbers looked.
If you actually dug into them a little bit, 12% of his 282 passing yards came through the air. 246 yards after the catch for Dolphins receivers against the Texans. And if you break it down a little further, the average pass distance on his four touchdowns, 5.5 yards past the line of scrimmage.
You know what? Hold on. Before you go, you know, picking apart Tannehill, those are the kind of numbers that Alex Smith would absolutely kill for if he had the opportunity to get the ball to game breakers in space.
There's no question about that, and that probably will you'll be yelled at if we're on Detroit and he goes nuts. So, moving forward there a little bit, he's still very much the dink and dunk quarterback, and I'm not sure you can rely on blown coverages, missed assignments, missed tackles from a Belichick coach team. Tannehill is really going to have to take some shots down the field, and for him that doesn't really mean deep bombs, but he needs to hit that 15 to 20 yard seam pass where he can just throw it in there, not have to worry about much touch. So he is going to have to expand his game tonight. When you talk about this Dolphins team under Dan Campbell, obviously renewed confidence. He allows these guys to bring out that inner dog and actually bite. Joe Philbin was the opposite. He removed all of the loudmouthed dogs in his locker room, so to speak. The guys that had personalities, the guys that were outspoken. Joe Philbin was a sheep, literally trying to lead a pack of lions. Dan Campbell's the opposite. He is a beast. His approach, and it's even written in the locker room now, keep what you kill. So this is just a completely different team playing with confidence. When we talk about this game, you had an interesting angle in terms of potentially going first half if you did like the Dolphins.
Yeah, I think when you look at this particular handicap, the big concern for me is the adjustments that these two coaches are going to make. I'm not saying Dan Campbell can't come up with a game plan that allows Miami to stay in the football game for at least a half, but at the same time, if Miami is down and they're outside the number, which is currently 5 at BetOnline for the first half, do we really have faith that back door is going to be open and that Miami can come bursting through? We know Bill Belichick makes better changes at the break than any coach in football, whether it's his coordinators, whether it's coming in with more than 2 game plans, like we know a lot of these NFL coaches prepare with. There's some real skepticism that this thing could be a field goal game at the break and really snowball downhill. So I think for me personally, taking the 5 in the first half, a little bit more of a compelling angle than grabbing the 8. But Payne, we mentioned how the Dolphins' offense stacks up with the Patriots' defense. You know, how do you see the other side of the ball? Can the Dolphins' defense do enough to slow down the Patriots? I know you've mentioned in great detail before, Miami's weakness is kind of taking away the middle of the field, and lo and behold, that just happens to be where Rob Gronkowski goes to keep what he kills.
Yeah, absolutely. That is a very, very inefficient part of this Dolphins defense. It's the middle of the field. They have trouble covering running backs out of the backfield. We saw that last week before Arian Foster went down. They have troubles with tight ends, and they don't have a full complement of guys to cover Gronk. In the past, it was Deion Jordan, clearly suspended, not there. It looks like Chris McCain, a guy who is going to develop into a starting linebacker this year, he might not even suit up. He's had trouble even making the 53 game day roster, so he's not going to be there. It's going to be tough for them to cover these tight ends and running backs. So that's going to be the issue here for me when I look at this Dolphins team. Troubling a little bit, but if you are to get pressure on Tom Brady, that is going to be the key here. And we know where he hates pressure, and it's right up the middle. So this is going to be the game where Sue will figure out if he's worth the paycheck. And he is going to have to be disruptive up the middle. And if he's able to do that, if this defensive line is able to take advantage of their one-on-one battles that Sue creates for them by taking on 2 up the middle, that will go a long, long way. You mentioned going first half. That angle to me makes a lot of sense. When you look at the last 2 trips the Dolphins have taken to Foxborough, they have outscored New England in the first half 30-17 combined the last 2 times. When you talk about those halftime adjustments by Bill Belichick, and anybody who knows, he comes into these games with 2 game plans. The Dolphins have been outscored 51-0 in the second half the last 2 trips to Foxborough. Miami here.
I mean, I'm a math guy, but that's not very good.
No, not very good. So if you do like the Dolphins, it's first half and not full game in my mind as well.
I would echo those same sentiments. And I know, Payne, this podcast may have turned more into pass the board than bet the board this week, but I think Miami first half makes an awful lot of sense. There is a little bit of value on a handful of other games, but the way things have been running, and we can't echo this sentiment enough. We know people want to be in action each and every Sunday, but you have to wait for the market to provide opportunity. And if we don't see it, we're not here to try and cram plays down your throat. That's never been the MO of this podcast, and it never will be going forward.
Absolutely. I completely agree with that. This is a card that, to me personally, sometimes you wake up, you see the board, and you're like, man,
we're going to be firing. And then there's other times where the games just aren't jumping out to you, and that seems to be this week. There'll be a couple value plays from me. Haven't locked in a single bet at this point personally. I think we'll probably have some action on our Monday night podcast, so you can look forward to that. But at this point, not a ton of stuff for us. We'll obviously be looking Denver in the Sunday night game. But aside from that, not a ton for me this week.
Yeah, it looks to be a relatively slow week on my front as well. As you mentioned, Monday night, clearly a compelling angle, one that we'll break down in much greater detail along with our surprises and disappointments of NFL Week 8. But I want to thank all loyal listeners for tuning in yet again. You guys continue to make this one of the best podcasts around, and the numbers definitely show that. So thank you. Tell your friends, tell your family, tell people you don't like. We're more than happy. Every ear counts just the same. For Pain Insider, follow him on Twitter, at Pain Insider, our special Thursday guest that's with us each and every week from Bet Online, Dave Mason. You can find him on Twitter at Dave Mason, B-O-L. Sign up SoundCloud, iTunes, or check us out at Todd's Take. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me on Twitter at Todd Furman. Best of luck, not only Thursday with Dolphins Patriots, but all your action on Sunday. And hopefully, my friends, we'll see you at the window.